Radio Pulpit, 657 AM, your daily companion.
Hello, hello, hello. Very good afternoon to you once again. Shame Dr. Manda has been waiting for me. Dr. Manda, what a hectic afternoon it's been. How are you doing?
I'm good. How do you do, Luca? How has it been?
It's been good. And I see you back in the country. Once I see your bookshelves, I know you're back in South Africa. Dr.
I'm
Manda,
right here. I'm right here back in South Africa.
He's been showing us planes.
We missed our show last week.
Yeah, and you've just been showing us some nice pictures from Ireland and having a great time. So I'm like, back to studio. There's no time to play now. Oh, welcome back. I think let's get right into it, Dr. Manda. And if you don't know him, Dr. Manda is our resident leadership guru. Dr. Manda Chiflara is the founding director of Super Lead Advisory, and he specializes in strategy, in operations, and leadership development. He's a strategist, leadership coach, and an author of Lead with Super Clarity, a global recognized facilitator, and he has moderated high-profile events. Dr. Manda, good afternoon. Welcome back. Let's start here. Let's start here. So over the past few weeks, Dr. Manda, we've had, such an enriching series focused on values-based leadership at an individual level. So looking at things like, self-reflection, purpose, strength, and commitment. But today, we're turning a corner, I believe. And this new series shifts our focus from the individual to the team. Can you then walk us into this new conversation, and what are we focusing on, and maybe why does it matter so much?
Absolutely. So let's dive straight in. So I mean, we had such an awesome set of conversations in the past couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. Personal leadership, sets a very, very good foundation for leading anyone, leading teams, leading organizations. Mm. But it really comes down to, how this plays out in a team environment. Mm. And so that's why we want to kind of just now shift ever so slightly to say, how do you build and lead thriving teams?
Yep.
I must tell you, I have met way too many people that work for like incredible organizations, big brands, from the outside, and you're like, yo, I want to go work there.
Uh-huh.
And then when you sort of talk to them, sometimes you find they are miserable, they are not growing, there is some struggle of some sort. And largely because no matter how big an organization you work for, no matter how grand the reception area and all of that stuff, it comes down to what actually happens in your team environment.
Yep.
How you engage with your manager, how you engage with your colleagues. If this unit is not working well, we have a problem. And many forward-thinking companies, instead of sort of fixating on the outside view of what this company looks like, mm-hmm. they're now more focusing on how do we make teams themselves. There might even be thousands of teams. How do we make the teams themselves work better?
Okay.
Because that's where it matters. That's where innovation is. That's where people grow. That's where, breakthrough solutions are designed. And that's where the organizational health stems from, if you do it. Now, so that's sort of the why. Now, to go into the nitty-gritties, you remember when we did the values-based leadership, we kind of took a model and then we sort of ran with it for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Now, for this time around, we are structuring this on a research that was done at Google, the company.
Okay.
Right. So Google itself sort of went out and say, let's sort of do research and figure out, how do we make Google teams work? Mm-hmm. And they actually named this project Aristotle based on the famous quote that of his that says, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts.
Mm.
Now, I'm gonna share all of the sort of the five key areas to make the teams work in a moment. I want to first just sort of say that this is not the only way to think about team effectiveness. There's many frameworks, but this one that we're kind of using for the next couple of weeks, it just aligns with so many frameworks, and it's a lot easier to work with.
Yep.
Now, question back to you, Luco.
Okay.
We want to think about what makes teams great and work. Before we share what we have to share, what are some of your thoughts? You may have been part of a team.
Mm-hmm.
What made that team, you know, function and work? You may also have been part of teams that didn't work. Some initial thoughts. And this is to you and also to our listeners, just to kind of bring our minds in to say, wait a minute, what actually makes a great team at church? What makes a great team in a company of the sort? What makes a great team in a public sector environment?
I think for me, what makes a great team is proper communication and making sure that everybody is able to work respectfully with everybody in the team, be it the manager working respectfully with the ones on the ground, which is obviously the rest of the team, or even the team being able to work, you know, in line and hand in hand with the manager with respect. So as much as we've got all these different leadership roles or different roles that we play in the team, as long as we can respect each other and communicate effectively, we're able to know, I know where you're at as Dr. Manda, you know where I'm at. So we don't end up overlapping each other's business.
Sure. Right. I think you must do this show.
Really? Now you give me too much credit.
No. Spot on. So we're going to use different words to sort of, you know, express what you have expressed. Team at Google, they went out to find out what makes a Google team work, and they conducted over 200 plus interviews. They analyzed, check this, over 250 attributes of over 180 active Google teams. So, in short, they did a lot of number crunching and they did a lot of research. And the first thing they found out was that it's not so much who is in the team, but it's more sort of how do the team interact and how is their work structures? How are people allowed to make their contribution?
Mm.
Essentially summarizing what you said. But there were five main things that they just kind of, to make it super clear, that these things, they make a team effective.
Okay.
And then I'm going to ask a question just after this. So you stay with me.
I must psych myself for it.
The first one is if there is a psychological safety, if there is psychological safety in a team, and what they mean by that is if members of the team can feel like they can take risks, they can express their ideas without the fear of, you know, being embarrassed or being ridiculed or worse in some instances. Number one is psychological safety. Number two, if there's a sense of dependability, can we count on each other to contribute our quality pieces of work on time as well?
Right? Yep.
So dependability was the second one. The third one is if there is structure and clarity.
Mm-hmm.
Our roles clear, the plans clear, we know who is doing what, and everything is aligned, and the team is structured. Number four is meaning of work, which is, are we as a team working on something that is personally important to each of us? Meaning of work. The last one is impact of work. Do we fundamentally believe that the work we are doing matters?
Hey.
Now, those are the five. Psychological safety, dependability, structure and clarity, meaning of work, and the impact of work. The first question is, which of these things do you think the Google team found out to have the biggest impact of all the five? It's a guess. It's a guessing game.
Yeah, I think it's dependability.
Okay. Fascinating. The answer is they found out that psychological safety is by far the most important of the five dynamics.
I should have trusted my instinct.
So to be clear, all of them matter, but psychological safety
was top.
Found to be the most important.
Interesting. All right. Now, you mentioned psychological safety, you know, as the first factor, like we just spoke about it. It's a term that's become more common in leadership and organizations, organizational circles, that is, but many still misunderstand it. Can you then unpack what psychological safety actually means and why it matters for the teams?
Absolutely. So psychological safety refers to this team climate where people feel safe to take interpersonal risk. Now, this is a specific type of risk. There's all sorts of risks out there.
You don't take uncalculated risks on behalf of the team.
Do I feel safe to take interpersonal risk? Mm-hmm. By that we mean, do I feel like I can speak up?
Mm-hmm.
I can offer a new idea. And here's the most important one. Can I admit a mistake without the fear of embarrassment, punishment, or being seen as incompetent? And when you talk about safety, we're not referring to sort of physical safety. That's another conversation. But this emotional and psychological security within a team context. Am I safe to say, guys, that was me. I did that. And while the concept has been, you know, touched on as far back as 1960s by the likes of Edgar Schein, it was Dr. Amy Edmondson, a Harvard professor, who sort of brought this more to the public and made it a lot more visible. She produced her work in the landmark study in 1998, where she kind of said, hey, psychological safety is actually key to innovation and actually team performance. Then Google's Project Aristotle later sort of validated that, and that's why psychological safety has become such a buzzword. But in the problem with buzzwords also is they come through and they lose their context and the nitty-gritties of what actually is going on here.
True. Now, that's such an important distinction, I must say, because many leaders might assume that a quiet, a compliant team is a well-functioning one. But as you're saying, silence doesn't always mean safety. So, Dr. Manda, what are some of the signs that psychological safety might be missing in a team, even when everything looks okay on the surface? Because sometimes everything really does look all proper and hunky-dory.
Absolutely. And just because the team is quiet doesn't mean everything is okay. And I think we know this. There's silence at home, that also doesn't mean that that everything is okay.
Have you ever heard that? Sorry, Dr. Man, have you ever heard that thing on Facebook? They say, you must keep quiet and move in silence, you know, to make big moves. And then some say, sometimes you're quiet and you're not producing a thing. It's a waste of time. Sometimes we need you to speak because even after your silence, we see nothing.
So the silence doesn't mean you're producing.
It doesn't mean you're producing. Sometimes it means you know nothing sometimes.
So in this case, silence doesn't mean that the team is fine, doesn't mean that it's secure. And, you know, this prolonged silence sometimes might kind of talk to fear and that the environment is unsafe. Now, we can actually even play to... one can also, whoever is listening to us, can take note and ask these questions to their team, right? About seven of them. I was going to ask you to say yes or no to these things, but, you know, I don't know. So just answer inside, right?
Okay.
So there's some questions that, you know, one can do very quickly to sort of check, is the team environment psychologically safe? Like, the first question is, if you make a mistake on this team, it is not held against you.
Sure.
Could you say yes or no? Don't answer.
Okay.
Number two, members of this team are able to bring up problems and tough issues with ease. Yes or no, and to what degree, right?
Mm-hmm.
People on this team sometimes accept offers of being different. You know, they kind of say, hey, I have a different view. I often say in my classes when I teach that those are some of my favorite words when one of the students says, I have a different view.
Oh.
That we're not sort of all doing groupthink. It's safe to take a risk on this team, if yes or no. No one on this team will deliberately act in a way that undermines my efforts.
Yeah.
Working with the members of my team, my unique skills and talents are valued and are utilized. And if you have got way more answers that are on the negative across this number of questions, there is a good chance that maybe we do need to revisit how the environment is.
Maybe we need to change your team.
This one, sometimes the psychological safety kind of you lose it over time.
Mm.
As the stress and the pressure and the targets and all of that stuff starts to kind of build up. You know, you may have, you know, 2019, you know, you probably knew that your team was, you know, together, there was psychological safety, you were innovating, there was a robust conversation, people were free to you know, admit mistakes. And then over time, with more tighter controls, with more processes, you might find that maybe we are no longer as psychologically safe.
True. Now, that really puts things into perspective. So then, if psychological safety is so foundational to how teams perform, Dr. Manda, what can leaders then do to start creating that kind of environment where people actually feel safe to speak up?
Right. So Amy Edmondson has got a beautiful framework, which I think it's so easy to work with.
Okay.
So the first thing she sort of say, hey, as a leader, so one maybe is to do that initial assessment to sort of figure out where are we at, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are in a worse position, you know, maybe you do need to act faster than the rest of the other teams. But there's sort of these sort of three steps or layers. Yeah, three steps maybe one can think about as a leader. Number one, she talks about what they call setting the stage. Number two is inviting participation. Number three is responding productively. So I'll just kind of touch on these things one at a time. On the setting the stage, she sort of recommends that when the work begins, and as a leader, you want to frame the work in such a way that you set expectations about failing, uncertainty, sometimes some things that we are not too clear about, and that you expect everyone to sort of share their ideas, and they're not going to be criminalized for them, unless if it's a criminal activity. but it's important to, at the beginning, to sort of say, hey, we're embarking on a big project.
Yeah,
I do know that we're going to fail a number of times, and I know that not everything is clear. There are so many things we don't know. So if anything comes up, if you make a mistake, you know, be the first one to come out, sort of talk to us.
Mm.
So that helps to just kind of frame the environment in that, you know what, in this team, failure is expected, because failure, you know, is a constant journey, man. It's going to be with us. If you're going to do something meaningful, some things are going to go wrong. Mistakes are going to be made.
Yeah.
But it's important that we sort of frame that. Very quickly, I'll go to the second one. The second one is about inviting participation. Now, as a leader, the role there is to kind of ask the questions that help people sort of, you know, share their mistakes, their unfully formed ideas, is to sort of say, hey, is to listen intently as well, demonstrate your own humility, be the first one to say, I don't know this. Does anyone have an idea? I made this mistake. Can someone help me fix it? So by doing that, you're sort of saying, I'm human too.
Yeah.
You're vulnerable as well. The third one is respond productively. So when someone is raising a random idea,
mm-hmm.
or a mistake or something like that, you know, you want to kind of respond with curiosity rather than with criticism.
Yeah.
You want to sort of acknowledge the different idea, the mistake, but more productively. So to summarize, you frame the work to always expect that mistake will happen.
Yeah.
Number two, invite participation. Number three, when they do share, respond productively.
Wow. Now, you've spoken about the psychological safety, which doesn't mean being comfortable. You said it means having the courage to speak up, challenge ideas, and learn together. But in many teams, especially high-pressure environments, silence can be a norm, actually. And people hold back even when they have valuable input, that is. So how can leaders then begin to shift that culture and encourage a more open and honest contribution?
The simplest way, it starts with the leader. To be able to sort of share when, and then express that I'm wrong now, or I was wrong, and a whole range of. We're not advocating for leaders to be incompetent so that they can always kind of say I'm wrong, I did that badly. But all of us do make mistakes. Right?
True. So
that's very, very, very key.
Yeah.
It's more important, I think, how you role model this by far than sort of follow the steps. Most people will sort of say, hey, does anyone have any questions? You know, you may want to fix some of the language to say, are we missing something here?
Wow.
I think I'm wrong. So some teams, they do what they call a pre-mortem. So for instance, the campaign you had the conversation about right now. Let's assume that's a project.
Okay.
So a pre-mortem says a meeting before that project, which is call everybody and say, right, assume everything goes wrong. What will we have done wrong? What will we have missed in our planning? And that sort of says we don't have it all. Yes, we have got a project, but there might still be something missing. At a culture level, the team at Google, I think since 2016, they have sort of this, I think it's a quarterly kind of conference, if it were, or a big thing, where they come and present all their failed ideas. And they celebrate failure and they draw learnings out of that.
Wow.
So imagine you're leading a church and you have a conference on all our failed ideas and projects. And that allows you to... one lady was saying this, that she also makes a funeral for her failed mini projects and ideas.
Oh, wow.
Institutionalize this. But all the nuances, you know, they differ by company and by people. And, you know, some are more expressive, some are not. But the core is this. We are human.
Yeah.
We make mistakes.
True.
If we create an environment and that acknowledges that, that we can make a mistake, we can be wrong, we can start and launch a project, a youth project that doesn't work, and all of these things, it just creates room for everyone to show up authentically. And knowing that they don't have to be perfect.
Wow.
Perfect, no matter who says what, does not exist. We are in the team context.
Yeah.
We are all human with different strengths and weaknesses. And the more we can bring all of this to bear, the better the teams are likely going to be.
Interesting. Now, we've touched on a lot today, Dr. Manda, from understanding what psychological safety really means to how leaders can actually begin creating a culture where it's lived out. But it's not an overnight shift. So what advice would you give to leaders who are trying to build this into their teams but aren't sure where to actually start?
Very simple and very quickly. The encouragement is to start small.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to now have a conference tomorrow. You know, it's a build up this thing.
Yeah.
Invite feedback as quickly as possible so there's increased awareness. Model vulnerability. And thank people for speaking up, for bringing an idea that's ridiculous, for acknowledging that, you know, they made a small mistake last week. Demonstrate and that you appreciate that and celebrate that. So start small, invite feedback, model vulnerability, and thank people when they speak up and when they contribute, even in ways that are unique.
Wow. Sure. Dr. Manda, this is a fitting way to actually kick off a new series on building teams that thrive. And, you know, for those who are listening and want to take practical next steps, whether for themselves or for their teams, how can they actually engage further with SuperLead? And can you give us a quick preview of what's coming up in the next, you know, or the rest of the series, that is?
Absolutely. So I'll start with the last question. So we kind of said, hey, there's these five elements that make a fantastic team. And then we, you know, according to research, psychological safety came up as the most important. Mm-hmm. And then next week, we're going to talk about the one that you pick.
You want me to bring you in tomorrow?
Next week, we're going to talk about the one that you picked.
Okay.
As the most important. So next week, Monday, is International Lupus Pick Day. We're going to do that. So people can we work with teams, help them thrive, and we facilitate those kind of conversations and help teams do better and just improve and see the benefits thereof. People can reach out to us. We've got a WhatsApp number, 07802000051, or email us at mandat@superlead.co.za. That Manda has got two A's in between.
Yes,
Manda
T. Oh, Dr. Manda, thank you so much. Thank you for coming through. Let's meet up next week on International Lucos Day. Have a great one,
we'll
then.
See you on International Luco Day.
Radio Pulpit, 657 AM, a companion for those who need encouragement. Listen to us on our app or visit radiopulpit.co.za. When the drive gets long, we are there. Listen live to Radio Pulpit on radiopulpit.co.za, DSTV 882, and OpenView 607. Also, follow us on our social media, download our app, and listen to our podcasts wherever you are. Radio Pulpit, still your daily companion.
The Word for You Today is our youth devotional that has been available as a printed booklet and has also been accessible via email. It is intended to encourage and guide young people in their walk with God. Well, we are excited to announce that the youth devotional is going fully digital. This means that the Word for You Today booklet will no longer be available in hard copy or sent by post, but it will still be accessible on the I Am Youth website, email subscription, and I Am Youth app, which is available on both the Google Play Store and App Store for iPhone users. Visit www.imymovement.co.za and join the move to digital.
You and 657 AM and Life, a winning team on the road to eternity.